That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
I went to a Target one day, bought a SodaStream, which is a machine that allows you to carbonate anything, and essentially started making my own concoction that at the time I was calling Tropicalation. And we would knock on people, on random people's doors, and be like, hey, we're here for the party. And the guys are like, what are you doing with this CO2 tank in my house? Like, and we would be like, just give me 5 minutes, try this thing. If you don't like it, we leave. And we never left.
So within 3 months of launching, we were in music videos with Tiny and Fade. And in 6 months, we went from that to 15 stores at 15 cases each to then getting all the stores across the state.
Between now and 2027, the market for alcoholic hard seltzers is expected to grow at a faster rate than any other alcohol by volume category, according to a report from Grandview Research. And among consumers of alcohol, Hispanic consumers tend to consume more than other groups. When college friends Ricardo Sucre, Gabriel Gonzalez, and Gustavo Larquea saw statistics like that, they saw it as the perfect opportunity to fill a void in the market with a distinctly Latino hard seltzer. Tired of drinking hard seltzers with flavors like raspberry, blackberry, and cherry, the three friends decided to launch Casalú, a rum-based seltzer with flavors like limon and maracuya, which is Spanish for passion fruit. The cans are now available in stores all over Florida, Nevada, and New York. Co-founders Gabriel Gonzalez and Ricardo Sucre joined Business School today to explain how a pandemic obsession with the SodaStream led to a business idea, why the founders were set on launching in Miami, and why singer-songwriter Fade says estas latitas tienen magia, aka these little cans contain magic. Plus, they answer questions from small businesses all over the United States. I'm journalist Fernando Hurtado, and on Business School, I'm on a mission to map one of the fastest growing groups of entrepreneurs in the United States, Latinos. We're tracking how they got started, found success, and the most important lessons they've learned along the way. And remember, business school is expensive. Business school is free. All right, Ricardo and Gabriel, welcome to Business School. How are you guys?
Doing good.
Great. Hey, thank you, man. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Of course. Thank you for joining. I'm excited to do an episode devoted to hard seltzer specifically because, one, I never get permission to talk about hard seltzer for, 45 minutes. But my first question for you guys, and I wonder this with all types of entrepreneurs and business owners, someone who's so deep in the hard seltzer space, the alcoholic space, like how many hard seltzers do you guys drink in a week or a month? Or maybe do you not drink as many hard seltzers as we think you may?
Actually, funny enough, I got that question yesterday. Like, a friend of mine was like, man, how many are you drinking? And I'm like, it really depends. Last week, probably during Basel in Miami, a little too many. But, we're trying to keep it under control. You know, that the old saying, don't get high on your own supply, it kind of applies.
But still some exposure to your product, which I'm sure is always good.
Yeah.
So you guys met, including your co-founder as well, who's not able to join us today. You guys met at North Carolina State University. Do you guys remember that first day you met?
I'm trying to think. I know exactly. Actually, yeah, it was at a soccer game. I just remembered. So a friend of mine, of ours, from Caracas, Jorge, I had come to the U.S. before Ricardo, a little bit before. And I remember he was like, hey, I have this friend who just came, and he said, let's see each other at the soccer game. So all the Latinos, because we happen to have a whole Latino crew all the way to Guatemala, Venezuela, Colombia, different parts of Latin America. And we all show up to the game. And I remember now that that's exactly when I met Ricardo for the first time.
And both of you are from Venezuela. How do two guys from Venezuela end up in North Carolina, of all states, for college?
Surprisingly, a very similar story. So I'm going to tell mine, and you'll see how kind of connected to what Ricardo's going to say is, but in my case, so I'm from a different city. It's about 2 hours away from Caracas, where Ricardo's from. It's called Valencia. And I, for random situations, obviously, in life, especially what Venezuela went through, an aunt of mine came to the U.S. in 1998. And she went from Florida to... she was convinced to go to North Carolina. And so when I was a kid and had the ability to travel, you know, I like to joke that my friends would go to Disney World and I would end up in Smithfield, North Carolina, which is kind of like where farms are at. And but that was like the best time ever that I remember from my childhood. And when it came time in 2012 to kind of leave the country and have the ability to look for a better future, then North Carolina was pretty familiar.
Yeah, my story is pretty similar to Gabo's in the sense of for some random reason, really hard to explain, two of my aunts, one from my dad's side of the family and one from my mom's side of the family, ended up moving to Raleigh, North Carolina. When I got to Raleigh in North Carolina and got exposed to like the opportunities and the better future that I could build for myself there, I mean, it was a no-brainer for us. And I decided to stay in North Carolina after the English program that actually Gabo and I both did the same English program at NC State, funny enough.
And I imagine even with family and with the language immersion program, there still must have been some culture shock when you start at North Carolina State University.
Coming to the U.S., you know, you see more in California or in Miami, in Florida, where there's more Latinos like you around. In North Carolina and in Raleigh specifically, at NC State, it wasn't that common. So it was a double culture shock that now looking back, appreciate a ton. And at that moment, I didn't necessarily understand because a lot of country music, a lot of just different experiences that I'd never been exposed to.
So, and I promise this question is relevant. I don't get to ask it to basically any of our guests, but it's relevant to the story of Casalu, which comes later in life for you guys. But what were you drinking at your college parties?
Rum was kind of like a main course of action. Like, no matter what, we all kind of had exposure to rum. We all like to drink rum. And so to go back to your question, there was two typical answers, beers or rum on our Latino group. And I was the one that didn't like beer. So I was mostly leaning towards the rum side.
I think there's something important to unpack there because it was also the fact that because of alcohol and liquor rules in North Carolina, you know, it's controlled by the state. So it's not like you can go to a grocery store or a liquor store that is not owned by the state to purchase the alcohol, or in this case, liquor. Finding and having rum became a special thing because there was no Latin American rum. So what it became a frustration for us of not having the ability to find what we had back home, which was cheap, available rum that was high quality that we could all enjoy, became basically a game. Our friends from Nicaragua would bring Flor de Caña. Our friends from Guatemala would bring different types of rum from Zacapa to Excel. And Venezuela, we would bring 5 different types of rum. So it became almost like a game and a way to connect at a deeper level that simply did not happen or could have not happened with any other type of liquor.
So then after NC State, you know, you all go your separate ways. What were your first jobs?
I stayed at NC State. I was very lucky that one of my professors became a friend and a mentor, you know, because of immigration challenges that naturally happen for a lot of us who come to the country. It's really tough to stay right after. One of the paths is to work at a educational institution. So one of my professors luckily had an opening in under one of the programs to manage the launch of new companies in the university and found me to be like the right fit for it. And we had built a really good working relationship previously to that. So I stayed at NC State working as the manager for what would fundamentally be the incubation program for new companies.
I went into Bleacher Report, or the monster behind it, which is Turner Broadcasting, TNT, all that stuff. And I was basically focused on sports rights acquisition. So there was a new product launch called Bleacher Report Live, where we had the rights for the Champions League and stuff like that. And I was focused on adding content, basically acquiring content to bring it into the fold of Bleacher Report Live, that if you can think of it as a Netflix, but for live sports.
And then you guys go on, have your separate careers, you start them off, and then the pandemic comes. And this pandemic becomes kind of an inflection point for you guys, where one of you is sitting on their couch listening to Bad Bunny. Can you fill in the blank on that story?
Yeah. When the pandemic happened, hard seltzer were boom, right? It was like White Claw time, it was High Noon time, and it was all those things. And I remember trying High Noon, and there was a moment where I was like, this clicks and there's something missing here. I read and it was vodka soda. You look at the ingredients, vodka, sparkling water, and juice. And I'm like, the drink that we grew up drinking after you kind of matured from the rum and coke is rum, sparkling water, and lemon juice. And to me, there was like a disconnect between, you know, Bad Bunny in the background and the kind of the Barstool Sports kind of marketing that High Noon had. And it was like, there's something here from a flavor standpoint. There's something here missing from a brand standpoint. And, you know, that's kind of when I went to a Target one day, bought a soda stream, which is a machine that allows you to carbonate anything, and essentially started making my own concoction that at the time I was calling Tropicalation. And Gabriel, I don't know how many months later after, I don't know what iteration the Gabriel came about, but he came about when the iterations were pretty decent. So he really enjoyed it.
How were the first ones?
It hasn't changed much significantly, honestly. The concept remains pretty much the same. It was just like, oh, I would add too much lemon and it would be like super citrusy and like almost like bites your, like, you know, when the feeling of like the muscle behind your face kind of starts biting and you're like, this is definitely too acidic. Things like that, it would be too little rum or not the right rum, etc.
So right from the get-go, you kind of had the ingredients at least, right? And then you start making all these iterations of this drink, which you call, is it Tropicalation?
Tropicalation is an extremely critical part of the Casa Lu story because I would say it's the soul of the brand and what the brand represents. But to understand where it comes from, it starts really at a pre-game. I was there 2012 and I had just basically come to the US a couple months before to live and to immigrate, and I found myself in Boston at a pregame, and a friend from high school happened to be there and we're just having a good time, and he comes to me and says, are you feeling tropical yet? In Venezuela we call it estar prendido, which means, you know, are you feeling good and buzzed? I took that concept or that idea and said, okay, this means much more than that. It means much more than being prendido, how we call it. It is about that. It's about being at the right moment with the right people. And I think I felt like a sense of gratitude to be there, in a sense, despite I was so far away from home, that I took that tropical name and made a playlist called Tropicalation. That the goal was that for the music that was there, it would always try to make people who listen to it feel that way. And it was a playlist that started to grow organically. And at that time, you know, Spotify wasn't that big. It had just started here in the US and ended up, you know, having over 1,000 followers there, which for the size of the network was like pretty big. And it was what we started listening to in college for years, and that grew. So years later, when Ricardo is calling it Tropicalation, and I tried that, one of those first iterations of Casa Lu, to me was, after so many years, after that concept was created, it was like, okay, it's not only music, is this makes sense. There are other ways to share this feeling. And that became just something very evident, I think, for both of us.
Yeah, so this is where Gustavo like formally enters the picture. Tell us a little bit about Gustavo Ricardo and why you go to him with this idea as well.
So Fernando, to give you a sense of Gabo tries it, you know. Gabo, I know he's involved in like technology companies, going to Silicon Valley and stuff like that. And I've been on the media world, brand building, kind of more different focus, right? And I'm like, Gabriel's never gonna be into this. My self-awareness is one of the things that I would say is good for me. And I was aware that I needed somebody super disciplined who will be a go-getter, who like can make anything happen. If he says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it. And Gustavo was the obvious choice from that perspective, from our group of friends. And I call Gustavo in a very, you know, this story is very Gustavo. I call him and I go, man, I have this idea on the hard seltzer space. Like, I want you to just look at it. Let me know what you think from an opportunity. He's like, okay, let me dig. Give me 7 days and I'll get back to you. I'm like, fine, sounds good. He goes 7 days, he studies, he's like, okay, it's growing, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, I have this idea. There's nobody doing one that is rum-based for Latinos. Like, there needs to be a brand that owns this space, that actually tells our stories, blah, blah, blah. He's like, all right, I like what you're saying. Give me 2 days to analyze it. And if I'm in, you know, I'll go in 100%. 2 days come, and he calls me back and he goes, I'm in, let's do this. So we started working, and the good thing is Gustavo has an uncle that used to work at AJ Gallo. So he had the experience in the alcohol business. AJ Gallo launched High Noon. So we had some, so we started working on it, and literally a week later, Gabo hits me. Well, before he hits me with the website, he hits me with this, he's like, random question. Send me a screenshot of your Explore page on Instagram. And I'm like, what? I'm all right, I'll send it to you. I sent it to him, and mine is like cars, some stuff about sports, like Uninterrupted and things like that. And then Gabo sends me a screenshot of his Explore page. And it's like all like reggaeton gossip, like who is Anuela dating? What is Anita doing with this other guy? And it's like all gossip, like super shallow entertainment stuff. And I think to him, that was a proof of like, why if there is Latinos who have this type of Explore page like yours, and then there is this Latinos, musicians, celebrities, business owners, et cetera, who are doing really important things, and they're just treated in regular media, just like gossip, entertainment, shallow things. And that's when the Team Fairies kind of like story opens his eyes up and goes, you know, we need to give a voice to this. We need to be part of that kind of brand that empowers what's happening with our culture. And so the same way you look at Red Bull, that they empower, let's say, adrenaline culture, like the culture behind stream sports, which 20, 25 years ago, you wouldn't see any of the stream sports that Red Bull is involved now. And Red Bull basically invested in them and making sure to make them big and give them a platform. And so when we started back the conversation, Gabo and I remember after he sent that, and then he sent the website with the tropicalation.com, the drinks at the time were purple. I don't know why he picked purple, but it was pretty funny to me. He's like, what is this thing? But to us, it was that. The vision was always that. And I remember we talked on the phone for like 2 hours on like the frustrations of like, I'm seeing the same things from a sports side, like, The Latino ones are not getting showcased as, you know, more than athletes. They're showcased as just athletes. And then Gabo from the musician side is the same concept. And so we wanted, through that frustration, created this vision of what Casa Lu is now.
So you have this part, larger mission where you want to, you know, highlight this Latino product. And I think in so few words, make it even more mainstream, which we're seeing now with Bad Bunny is a perfect example of that. Bad Bunny is mainstream. He's right. Not a Latino icon. He's right. A mainstream icon. At the same time, though, you have now to make a hard seltzer and you have to make a product. So what's that first step? How do you, like, what do you do next to make a hard seltzer?
Yeah.
Yeah. For us, it was a combination of things. Ricardo, I'll pass on it to you.
No, I mean, honestly, before really getting into the hard seltzer part, I think what we realized is we wanted to get basically outside validation of, are we onto something, and is this an opportunity that makes sense kind of like pursuing as a brand, as a business, et cetera. So to us, one way to prove that was to go through the NC State Startup Accelerator, which is a tool that is for current students and alumni up to 5 years. And at the time we were, I think we still are in that bucket. But essentially to us was, if we put this in front of sophisticated investors who have no relationship to rum, no relationship to what Latino culture is doing, no sort of bias in that sense, and still believe there's something here, this is an opportunity worth pursuing. And to us, we competed against 60 companies for 5 spots and we got in. And so that kind of really started the mission of, let's create the brand, because the process of making a seltzer and going through the process of launching in the market is very long. It's very sophisticated. You got to go through formulators. You got to get this approved by different government entities, et cetera, to then you launch in the market. But what we wanted to prove before is that there was demand, and almost treat it like a technology company in a sense where we were putting things out there. Like we had, and we have different stories about this, but we had a website, we had our Instagram, we had our branding, we brought in a designer from the get-go. And so we almost made you believe this was a real product that existed out there, and see if people would click on it, see if people would buy it. And then at some point when it came to the product itself, it was like the easiest, the avenue that we found that was the cheapest, I would say, and within the realm of possibilities of what the accelerator offered us. The accelerator, once you come in, they give you $5,000 of non-dilutable funding, which is great, phenomenal. But in the industry that we're at, really doesn't get you anywhere. You can't even formulate the industrial formula to actually get it approved with that. So we were like, all right, so how can we really get in front of our customers and get a sense of this is a product that they're willing to buy? And so we decided to rent an Airbnb in Miami for a month. It's like smaller than the living room of my apartment right now. 3 founders, 1 bed, and we decided to upgrade from a soda stream to a keg. And so the 5-gallon keg.
And why Miami?
So Miami to us was a combination of things. It's the most heavily dense Latino place in probably in the US or big city in the US. It's also, there's a lot of rum consumption. If Florida were to be a country, it would be the sixth biggest, most rum consuming places in the world. And then on top of that, I would say, and this is the most critical part, is that is the only place where big liquor brands actually market to Latinos in Spanish because of the density. So you go through I-95, you're going down in Florida, you're going into the big highways of Miami, and you'll see ads from Absolut Vodka, Blue Label, whatever, in Spanish. There's no other place in the US that you see that. And so to us, it was like, if we're able to make a mark in this market and we can cut through the clutter of everybody trying to appeal to the Latino, then when we go outside of Miami, it would be much easier because there's nobody talking to them. So that was really the pillar to this, to go into Miami. And so we went to Miami, we got a 5-gallon keg. We did what we had to do to get customers to really try our product and try what we were onto. And I remember the strategy was pretty simple. They start crashing parties of people that we are friends of friends with, or a family from somebody, et cetera. We crash those parties and see what they think. And, you know, we would show up. It would be me, Gabriel, and Gustavo, one carrying the keg, the other one carrying the cooler, and the other one carrying a CO2 tank. And we would knock on people and random people's doors and be like, hey, we're here for the party. And the guys are like, what are you doing with this CO2 tank in my house? Like, and we would be like, just give me 5 minutes, try this thing. If you don't like it, we leave. And we never left. Honestly, like once people tried it, they were hooked. And so that was the first week. The second week became, hey guys, can you come to my party? Like we, the keg started to become the special guest of people's parties. Event managers from Miami and other bars found out that we're like, hey, we want the product. And we're like, we can't sell this thing. It's a keg. Like it's still in infancy stage. And going back to a podcast that we just recently recorded with a really good friend, one of those things that we did in Miami got us into this publication called Snackshot, which is basically Andrea, she basically finds brands and finds trends earlier than anybody, and she's widely respected in the CPG world. And she found Casalu, and a person from a venture capital fund placed an order in our fake website. And so from there, going back to the story, that's the moment we realized, all right, I think we're onto something here. I think consumers like it. We know consumers like it. Now, what's the next step to really get into business? And it was to raise capital. And that was the cherry.
And at some point, at what point does it become Casalu?
Oh.
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, right before we end up going to Miami. Coincidentally, we were calling it, first we call it Maria, which was our mother's names, and it's a funny story because our lawyer Ed was like, this is not gonna fly. We said everybody has a Maria in their house, in their home, in a sense, right? Like as a concept, and someone who loves you, someone that makes you feel at home, and that's the feeling you get from like sharing having Casalu. You know, it's like being in your mom's or your grandma's house and sharing culture. And Ed was like, no freaking way. You can't call something Maria. That's crazy. So find a new name. P.S.
Was it because of copyright or?
Yeah, because of copyright, you can't get erasure. Like, it's just a common, it's like calling, you know, you can't just be Tom as a brand, right? Like it has to be deeper than that. And normally there are fanciful names you can use around and just different tactics. We kind of had pillars for the brand, and two of those pillars were Casa, our home and our heritage, and Salud, how we pronounce cheers, and how we invite other people to come into our culture. Because like we had said, right, like I think beer brands and a lot of other brands had done Latinos for Latinos really well, and now it was time and our duty really to do Latinos for the world. And Casalu was the name that truly represented that. Tropicalization was too long. So that's how we came to Casalu.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
I want to take a break there to show you guys some questions that small business owners from around the country sent in before we hear about how in the world you end up in stores all over Florida, in Nevada, and in New York. So we have two questions for you from Comcast Rise recipients. And just so you guys know, Comcast Rise supports the growth of all small businesses and individuals committed to uplifting their communities. And in the last almost 3 years, Comcast Rise has awarded more than $125 million in monetary marketing and technology grants to businesses all over the United States. So in each episode of Business School, we're asking small businesses to submit their questions for our guest lecturers. That's you guys. And our first question is from a cafe in Philadelphia. So we're going to play that question.
Hi, my name is Lizette Abney, and I'm owner and manager of Thunder Mug Cafe here in Philadelphia. When scaling your business up by 100%, what are some of the pitfalls that you should avoid?
I think we can take turns, Ricardo, see who gets the best answer. But like the first thing that comes to mind to me is something we realized pretty early on, which was not to fall for perverse incentives. And that is, I think the biggest lesson that we got. So for example, when Casalu had recently started, I think we're 1 or 2 months into Miami's like actual market, we started getting offered, you know, come and pay X amount of dollars to be in this event and in that event. And naturally, being a company like ours, we thought being in front of the most amount of people was the most valuable thing. And unfortunately, we chose to use some of our resources to do that. And what we quickly realized was we're so early on. And even if you're not as early, especially in the growth phase, like being able to deliver that story correctly to the right audience is what matters, versus saying, let me just get my stuff in front of a lot of people. So a lot of founders might make the mistake of overspending on advertising without, for example, figuring out who exactly is their customer and where can they find them. And that, I would say, is the biggest pitfall you can make, because that's where a lot of your resources can go down the drain pretty quickly.
So yeah. Staying true to your core values and your mission as a company.
Yeah. And I think from a tactical perspective is, if you're doing well and if you're in growth mode, you're going to get a lot of opportunities, right? So staying true to your values also means servicing a specific type of customer that can help you really grow, and not just trying to get or chase a shiny object is really going to be a disservice, is how I would put it.
Yeah. And right. I would first add to that is exactly the same thing I was going to say in terms of falling for perverse incentives. And when I heard the question at the beginning, she mentioned talking about 100% growth. And to me, the question I go back to her is, what is truly the vision you're looking for, and where do you want to take your cafe and build, like, reverse engineer from that? Because, you know, growing 100% could take you to somewhere where you don't want your cafe to be. So I think one of the things that we realized early on too was, okay, build towards the vision and not build towards specific growth metrics, because that you can, there's a trillion path to it, right? Like, you can open a second shop and have double the growth and you grew 100%, but is that what you want, or is that not aligned to truly what your vision is of the business?
Our second question is from a crepe business in Baltimore.
Hi, my name's Ann Koslow. I am the founder of Sophie's Crepes in Baltimore. We sell sweet and savory crepes to the Baltimore, Severna Park, and Annapolis area. And my questions for you today are, I'd like to know how you suggest creating the most effective social media strategy.
I would start by saying, if we knew, we would give it to her. Is one of the main things, but I think we can share some learnings for sure. I don't know, Gab, if you have anything specific in mind, but
No. And for Anne, I think, especially because of her business, I think a lot of what we were talking about earlier today would be pretty helpful. So I'll pass it on to you.
Yeah, I think you know, the main thing about social media, and this is something that it was specific to our industry. One thing we noticed really quickly is, nobody really follows or cares to follow drink brands, because basically what happens is you look at any other drink brand and all they have is different models, different things, or different moments with the same product, right? And so to us, it became, all right, what are the stories that we're telling and what is it that we're trying to say every time we post, and how to consistently give people that? Because there's two things. One thing is, like, how do you grow and show this to more people, which the name of the game right now, it's collaborations, like doing collab posts with different people, which is one part, which is bringing in people into the funnel. But the other part that we didn't realize was, once you bring them in, then what? You know, you have a follower, then why should they stay here? And I think that's where repetitive, consistent, or like, let's call it serified content. Like, hey, I got this business school cycle, like, content piece. if I go to that profile, I'm going to get more of that. Then that's why I follow, because I want to be back. I want them to give me that same content. So find ways to what you're doing in social, make it a series, because when people come in, it's like, I'll give you a follow if you're going to give me more of this. Whatever it is, the content that she's trying to build for the crib business. I have no idea what the specifics are, but basically it's like build something certified to create great customer retention where they believe and want to stay within your ecosystem. And then on the other side, find collaborations to bring more people and more eyes into your platform.
So create serialized content that develops customer loyalty. So thank you to our Comcast Rise recipients for their questions. I want to go back to the story of Casaludo. So you have success at these parties with this very famous keg that I hope to meet one day. How do you end up in Florida stores?
Yeah, to go through that, you know, fast track you through that process. Like Ricardo had said, you know, there's a very specific sequence of events that need to happen to get to those stores. I can say before I get into it that we did it all wrong, and I'm glad we survived the storm. But so we come out of Miami, we raise capital. Part of raising capital was, you know, at the end of the day, people invest in people. So we just got lucky. We got lucky that we knew certain people that were just the right fit at the right time for the right business. And we had built those relationships under meaning, and the vision of Casalu was very clear. And after we raised money, we raised our seed round, we go into the unknown territory. So a lot of Googling on how do you launch your own brand, a lot of mistakes. And the first step really is to develop a formula that can sustain production. We were ignorant in the sense that we thought, you know, we can take a recipe from the kitchen and put it on a can. It can't be that hard. Big mistake. There is a process that takes a long time to put something that's safe for consumers, that is going to have shelf life, that is going to be consistent. And we went through that. We just ended up learning that to get it right, we truly had to work with the best, and work with the most respected formula development company in the country. And we went full steam ahead into developing the formula, getting everything that we needed lined up, to then launching the market in Miami in April of 2022. That's exactly when we hit the streets. And I think what's special about it was that we made our fresh production run. We canned pretty successfully. Mistakes on the boxes that we had to fix by hand, because we were like, consumers cannot have a first bad experience of seeing the wrong calorie count on Casalu. So Gustavo was pasting a lot of stickers, probably like 8,000 stickers on boxes, and made it to the streets. And what we quickly realized was that we decided to launch without a distributor. Huge mistake in the general terms of anyone looking at this. If you're thinking about launching a brand, a drinks brand, please do it with a distributor. But it helped us, you know, our notion was, and it became true, was that it was going to help us understand how to sell into the stores, how to talk to the consumer, how to be in the stores. And we learned a lot of, you know, trial by fire. And that was really the initiation in the market of literally Ricardo, Gustavo, and I hitting on, knocking on doors and being like, hey, here's my seltzer, can you sell it? It's called Casalu. And most doors got shut on us a lot. And our first account was like Leo from like a gas station. Never remember your first engagement with a true customer. And he was like, I'm gonna help you guys, I'm gonna carry this. Shout out to Leo. And then from there, truly where I would say like the tipping point commercially in this first couple of months was Ricardo found that Total Wine had a minority program, and we drafted fundamentally an application to it, reached out, applied, and then got a response saying, hey, we would like to try some samples of the product. And then what we did, though, something that we've always done well since the time of the keg, which is how to look bigger, but how to apply the ethos and the vision of the brand to everything that we do, was in our PR package that we gave to pretty much influencers or people we looked up to, which was a CD player from like 2002 with a burnt CD that we had made at a studio from a friend that had the what we think is the history of reggaeton from like the first song that truly mattered that put us on the map to where we see reggaeton going as a global phenomenon. So it's kind of like seeing from Teo Calderon all the way to Rosalía and to Keisha, you know, kind of thing. And one of the founders and owners of Total Wine received it and shows up to a call with us and wearing like the headphones and saying like, I've been wearing these to my board meetings at Total Wine. And Total Wine is the biggest independent liquor chain in the country. And he said, look, I'm going to give you 3 stores. We thought we were going to pitch. And he just came ready to say 3 stores, 3 cases. And that was in the summer of 2022. And in 6 months, we went from that to 15 stores at 15 cases each to then getting all the stores across the state. And also them explicitly saying, every time you open a new state, we would like to be the partner who opens that state with you. That's how much they believed in a brand, a nascent brand like Casa Nu, and at the off-premise, which is called basically retailers, that's absolutely being the best partner we could have ever imagined. And in parallel to that, what we were doing was also permeating culture. So within 3 months of launching, we were in music videos with Tiny and Fade.
So then what I want to know is, I saw a social media clip on your page. La latita tienen magia. It's a video of Fade saying, estas latitas tienen magia, which is Spanish for these little cans contain magic. How did that happen?
That was all organic. I mean, I remember, well, a friend of ours, Alejandro, was working for Neon 16, which is it's a music label, and they had this opportunity where they said, look, we're going to shoot a video. It's kind of like last minute. We're not really doing product integrations or anything like that, but would you guys like to be part of it? And everywhere, Ricardo and I didn't even have tickets, and Ricardo had not bought the tickets we needed to buy. Anyway, and we said yes. We show up to the shoot. We don't know anybody. It's like our first time going to like a music video. Like, we didn't know how that worked. And I remember showing up, and there's a music director, and I'm like, hey, yeah, we're the product placement. And he's like, I haven't heard of any product placement. Like, what are you talking about? But I'm like, sure, come in. And it's funny because all of those people became really close friends of ours. And we just participated in the video, and that was absolutely organic. Shout out to Chris Floyd, who's a reggaetonero. His brother opened the cooler and took out a can. 5 minutes later, like, the whole set is drinking Casa Nu, on top of what was being shown in the video. And that was very organic. Like, Fade literally said that, or completely organically. He was like, give me more. This is great. Like, wow, this is crazy. Like, I love this product. And to this day, it's one of the most epic situations we've been part of.
So your first seed round is $1.3 million, which is a lot of money that I think people hear that amount and their question is, how do you get so much money? And someone who had been with you for a while in your life, at least, Gabriel, played a big role, and that person was at NC State, correct?
Yeah, so one of my mentors, who had taken a bet at some point, who was a professor of mine and then ended up becoming a close mentor of mine, really led that conversation with me. It's funny because he invited me to a country club that I've never been to, and I'm like using with my soda stream, you know, taking it out and showing it to him to drink, and he's like, tries it, and he's like, not convinced. And I was really there not to raise capital. I was really there to ask for advice, because I knew he was in entertainment. I didn't know exactly where. That's when he told me he was, you know, officially heard that he was part of the board at Caesars. And really the conversation went like, look, you know, J Balvin and Rauw Alejandro are sold out in Vegas. And then he said, where? At the Flamingo. And he's like, oh, that's one of our hotels. Wait a second. Did you say who? J-Lo? He had no idea who I was talking about. So I gave him a quick snippet, history of reggaeton, for like 10 seconds. I don't think he still knows what reggaeton is. And fundamentally what he said is, okay, if you had these in front of the right culture in these type of places, then you would sell like a gazillion cans. And I told him, that's exactly what I'm telling you. So he took that as a moment to say, okay, let me talk to certain people, see if we can help out in some way and participate. I wasn't expecting anything out of that, really. And what ended up coming back was four of the board members at Caesars Entertainment are the ones who led and pretty much did the round for Casalu's initial investment to get to the market. And 1.3 definitely does sound like a lot of money. It is a lot of money in tech, I'll tell you that. But in the liquor business, it was not like that much money, especially in canned products. So that is something we didn't necessarily expect in the beginning. And luckily we made it work. But yeah, it's that's how the story goes.
Well, I can imagine with just how much, you know, alcohol products cost. So you're now in Florida, Nevada, New York. You have a team of 8 people. You have some nice momentum with Casalu. What's next for the brand? Where do you see it or hope to see it in 5 years?
Yeah, no, I think the vision remains since the beginning. In 5 years, we definitely see Casalu being the brand that represents, I used to call it the modern Latino culture or the modern Latino, but a friend of ours corrected me the other day and said, look, in 5 years from now, Casalu is culture in the making. It is that new generation of Latinos. It's the brand that they feel identified with, but it's getting splashed over. So we do see Casalu nationally rolled out and definitely present in Latin America and in Spain. Really overlapping and saying, okay, this is what the young generation drinks, what they enjoy. And besides that, they understand that there's much more than the drink. Like we like to say, más que unas latas. And there's a whole lifestyle that we represent that is going to be pretty global.
Well, thank you guys. I want to wrap it up with some questions we ask all of our guests for a segment we call Business 101. So these are rapid fire questions and you can both answer. My first one for you is, what is your earliest money memory?
My earliest money memory is with my dad. I would say it's more his memory than mine, but it takes me to a factory in Venezuela. Hot. He was an industrial engineer, like industrial automation engineer. So anyway, it's a factory. Hot, like get under the machines and stuff. And he's like showing us, me and my brother, when we're like very little. And he's like, well, what do you think? And I'm like, cool, how much are you charging for this? And then he likes to say like, oh, that's when I knew this kid was not going to be an engineer. He was going to be in business. Because that's what I was thinking about since I was very little.
I have two anecdotes from it. My dad always said to me, and he would say it like very generally and not explain too much. But I think, you know, at this point, it really clicks. And it's like, money is a consequence. Don't chase money. And I was like, you know, I never really understood what that meant. And so later on, I was like, this just means to be really good at something and then money will come. Like money follows. Money doesn't, like you don't chase money. So that to me was really, really interesting because I contrasted with my mom's side of like, we were very fortunate. There was nothing in our home that we ever missed or needed. But, you know, when it came to, for example, I remember this one vividly. It's like the World Cup albums, like the Panini, you know, World Cup, Las Barajitas, where you put the stickers in the World Cup thing. And I remember my mom wouldn't buy us like the box. So we had all the Barajitas in the world that we would just go for it and make it easy, right? My mom would make us go to the kiosk and kind of hustle with some other people. And like, if we had one, we wanted to try to get two out of it so we could come back and kind of trade that and have two and make it three and make it more. So we would ended up filling out our album. But what I realized was two things. First, my mom loved that. Like, she loved that game. And she teach me to kind of like, with that, to love the process of getting to that achievement that we wanted, that in this case was filling out the album. But it was like, she was in love with like the moments where you were hustling to get it there. Not necessarily, oh, I finished the album, it's done. Like, I remember at the minute I finished the album, I never saw it again. But it was all the thrill of everything that happened in between.
If you had a business school course, what would it be called?
I'm still workshopping the name, but I think it's pretty on point of how I see the world. It's like, nobody knows exactly what they're doing. And if they say so, they're lying. It's kind of like a testament to, honestly, what the whole thing of entrepreneurship is about, is really like having a hypothesis, testing it out. And if the test makes sense, then double down and keep going. Acting like you know what you're doing is the easiest way to make everything go wrong. So I want to make sure that whenever kids go out of college, I think that there's a notion that everything is like, academia is very black and white. You know, there's usually answers to your math problems, and there's only one right answer to that math problem. I don't think the world operates that way. And so having a course where kids learn that's not the case, that not everybody knows exactly what they're doing, that there's some liberties into, okay, test this and do this and think more of the framework on how to test things than actually finding the right answer, I think that would be something I would have loved to have during my time in college.
And what would Gabriel 101 be?
You know, it's funny because some of what Ricardo mentions, I was lucky enough to experience a lot of that iteration, thinking, figuring stuff out. I think the 101 by Gabriel would be called curiosity and confidence. It's what the course would be called, because it's not a confidence of like, oh, I know I'm doing it right. It is more of a trust yourself in that moment, because it makes a whole world of difference to just stand by your vision while listening to other people who you're engaging with. At the end of the day, business is a people situation. It's all about people and that confidence that, yes, you could be 22 years old doing something that's very important, and trust your vision is critical. And that would be what I would focus on.
Thank you, Gabriel and Ricardo, for coming on Business School and sharing the story of Casalu.
Thank you for having us.
Gracias.
Hey, it's Fernando. If you like this episode, go back and subscribe to get notified when new episodes drop. And if you really, really like the episode, make sure to leave a review. It helps others find the most affordable business school out there right now. Business School. Thanks for listening.